what we immediately did was we looked at our roadmap and we looked at the stuff we were working on and said, are we actually building features and functionality and prioritizing the things based on the way this market and ecosystem and the adoption curve has changed?
Hi, I'm Jeremy Goldman, and this is Future Proof.
Let's face it, it's not hard to list companies that have been big losers in 2020, right? And yet there have been some bright spots. Zoom has been one of the darlings of this year, with its live video platform taking off in the early days of the pandemic. And yet, oftentimes, live video isn't the right solution for you at a given moment, just like sometimes it's better to text than to make a phone call. Michael Litt is the co-founder and CEO of Vidyard. Unlike Zoom, Vidyard helps with asynchronous video communication, as opposed to requiring you to be available on video in real time like Zoom. I spoke to Michael right before I ended my exodus in Cleveland before heading back to New York, and we talked about a wide range of topics, from the value of asynchronous video, to growing during a pandemic, to the downside of adding yet another tech tool to our arsenals. So let's jump right in.
Hey, so Michael, welcome to Future Proof.
I'm very happy to be here. Thanks for having me, Jeremy.
Yeah, absolutely. I think I've been familiar with your work and your platform for feels like a while now, actually. But for people who aren't as familiar with Vidyard, who are you and what do you do on a day-to-day basis?
Yeah, great question. Sometimes every day I wake up and I ask myself that question sometimes, especially right now. But Vidyard is a video platform for business. And so we started as an enterprise hosting and video management solution. We were a grad from Y Combinator in the summer 2011 batch. And over the years, we've been really building software to help businesses succeed with video. And so that started with an interactive video player, which integrated with marketing automation systems and CRM. And so you could track who was watching and for how long, and evolved into a number of tools to help people communicate more easily with video. And so the latest version of that is our Chrome extension, which sounds like you have some familiarity with. And it is a way of communicating with asynchronous video. And it's one click to record, one click to send. And we tell you when the recipient has watched it and for how long. And it creates a whole new kind of paradigm with respect to how people can communicate in an increasingly digital world.
Yeah, and I'm wondering if you can, just for the layman, define asynchronous video and why it's so important. Full disclosure, I'm preaching to the choir in this regard, right? Because I think that there are times where asynchronous video is absolutely what you need, and then there are times where live video, but how do you define it for people?
Yeah, right now we're having a synchronous conversation. I say something, you respond, it's this very dynamic two-way dialogue. And that is the same method we communicate when we're live and in person with people. Asynchronous communication is basically everything else. So you send a text message to somebody, they read that when they get access to it, they can think about it, eventually respond to it. Sometimes they ignore you. Email is asynchronous communication. And so video or asynchronous video can be really thought of as an addition to email or text messages. It's available on demand. It can be consumed when the recipient wants to consume it. They can choose how to respond. They can think about it. So it just doesn't have that kind of real-time conversational element. That's the big difference between async and sync.
And why do you believe it's so important? Because, and I'll tell you just my thought about why immediately, I think when I first heard of asynchronous video or first thought that this is a major area that's a little bit different, I thought, listen, this is just very efficient. It's like sending somebody an email versus getting them on the phone and having a 20-minute conversation when you just wanted to get an answer to one specific thing. If you get them on the phone, you feel weird about hanging up after 12 seconds. So you stay on the phone unnecessarily. And to me, it's just a matter of efficiency. But how do you think about it?
Yeah, for sure. I think we'll start there with efficiency. It's very efficient on both ends, the creator and the recipient. So on the creator side, you think about writing an email and a need to, especially if there's a visual component or highly descriptive element or anything to do with data, it's a very time-consuming process to write an email that can be easily understood. And you want to write it in a professional context and you know, reread it a couple times, and it's this kind of long, drawn out process. And you always worry if the recipient is going to misinterpret it. With video, you can literally sit down and pound out your thoughts. You can walk through a presentation. You could walk through a sales order, walk through some screenshots, or even how to use a piece of software, which is much easier to do with video. It's much more efficient than obviously the alternative, which would be to, again, document, grab screenshots, and hope that somebody is going to be able to follow those things along. As the person who receives that content, I think to your point, it's a much more enriched experience. It's also more informal in a lot of ways. And so it can be more expressive, right? You can see somebody's body language and the passion that they have for the topic like you just cannot see with other forms of communication, text included. And the last point on efficiency that I think you effectively brought up here is when you jump on a Zoom call with somebody, it's very difficult to have a 90-second Zoom call or a 30-second Zoom call because all the niceties of synchronous communication come to light. So how was your weekend? What did you get up to? And especially right now, given the global context of COVID-19, it can be really inefficient to jump on Zoom calls all day. And so sometimes just a quick update, a quick piece of information, super efficient. Next piece is it's much more expressive. I already touched on that a little bit, but body language, intonations, all those things are so enriching. And you don't get that in other forms of asynchronous communication. And so they fall a little flat, which can be a good thing sometimes. But if you're a salesperson or a support person and you're passionate about what your organization is doing and you want to communicate that to your customer, obviously video is a great way to do that. And so I think because of that efficiency and because of that expressiveness, it ends up being a very effective way of communicating. And we've almost said that video is the next best thing to being there in person. And I think that holds true for both synchronous and asynchronous video communication.
Yeah, I was thinking about this in terms of where we are in terms of the adoption curve of asynchronous video, because what's to me interesting is that the kind of live video, Zoom-like video, where you're essentially mimicking a phone call the way that it used to be, that's something that I feel like we haven't scratched the surface, but we're also further along on the adoption curve, in my opinion, than we are with async. Where are your thoughts in terms of like how big this can get and how big of a part you can be in the whole ecosystem?
Yeah, there's a really funny infographic going around that says, what was the agent that created digital innovation or digital change in your organization? And option A is the CEO, option B is the CIO, and option C is COVID-19. And so I think to your point, video conferencing and video communication, things like Zoom, were really accelerated across the adoption curve by kind of this forced remote and forced digital working scenario that most knowledge workers find themselves in today, or at least were in not so long ago. And so I do think that video communication from a synchronous perspective just recently crossed that chasm. And async was just a small twinkle in a lot of people's eye at that moment. Now, async, I think, has gotten the same push across the chasm into probably the early adopter or early majority category. But that majority in those numbers are still relatively small because I don't think it's necessarily natural for people to think about recording a video. And if you think about the demographic that it is natural to, it's really largely millennials and Generation Z, and probably more so Generation Z. And this is the generation that doesn't know what it's like to work without access to the mobile internet. This is the generation where when they join Vidyard, for instance, we actually have to teach them how to use email in a professional context because they're actually more comfortable with voice communication and recording videos and sending them based on the apps they're using on their social devices. And so all of that is to say, we're still very early in the adoption curve of asynchronous video, which means there's a huge opportunity because there's certainly a number of companies playing in the space. But there still is barriers to technology and adoption and habit that will need to change over time.
Yeah, this might be a touchy subject, but I think you mentioned out the CIO, CTO, that whole parable. And I think COVID-19 obviously has been responsible for a lot of digital transformation just out of necessity. And sometimes that can be a good thing. This can be a touchy subject maybe, but how have you been, quote unquote, people can't see my air quotes now, but I'm giving them, how have you been helped by the current pandemic in terms of category awareness and brand awareness?
Yeah, it's a great question. And it is touchy, obviously, because the global pandemic still exists. However, we have benefited from the work from home and digital first motion. And if you think about a very traditional industry, one that was still built on paper processing, in-person meetings, sales happening at golf courses over steak dinners, if those businesses weren't able to adopt digital means of connecting with their customers and interacting amongst themselves, they wouldn't have been able to survive through this process without breaking a lot of rules and potentially exposing themselves. And I think anything in the digital communication sphere, from Slack to Microsoft Teams, I hadn't really even heard of Microsoft Teams prior to COVID-19 being utilized in a lot of organizations. No offense to Microsoft, but it wasn't the piece of software you heard most about, at least in the startup ecosystem. And now it's on the tip of everybody's tongue, and I've been invited to so many conferences, et cetera, where they're using that product. And again, anything in digital communication had to be utilized, and all these laggard industries that were slow to adopt and potentially still 5 to 10 years out from adopting these technologies have moved forward and had to start using these technologies. And so it's this agent of change. And I think what's happened now is a lot of organizations have realized it's a lot cheaper to do business using digital communication technologies because people are working from home. They're not driving, they're not commuting, they're not traveling. They don't expect meals and entertainment and all these other things. And so the promise of digital communication has actually been fulfilled largely for a lot of these organizations because of this kind of forced habit. And I think the world will be forever changed, hopefully for the better, because of this. And of course, Vidyard has benefited from this. And so from March 1st, which was the beginning of this really in North America, maybe hybrid EMEA, North America territory, to I believe it was the end of June or the second last week in June, we had seen about 2.8 million users and about a 400% lift in the number of people that were signing up and using the product during that period of time, largely because of that tailwind.
I was actually going to ask you, even apart from the pandemic, I'm wondering, have you been able to isolate out what type of growth that you had been seeing beforehand versus after? Because I think that it seems like obviously the pandemic has to be a major portion of it. But at the same time, it seems to me that digital acceleration has been such that everybody is looking to find those like few small things that they can do that their competitors aren't doing that can push them ahead and make them just a little bit more productive. And I imagine like there are other tailwinds that are part of it also.
Yeah, it's a great question. So our team, I have to give them so much credit because we have a very defined list of stakeholders in the organization. It's customers, it's the company, it's our community, our local community, which we benefit from a hiring perspective, and we want to do right inside of that community. As we succeed, they should succeed as well. And then finally, our shareholders. And putting customers first, obviously, is what most organizations do. And our team quickly understood once the shock of what was happening globally settled a little bit that we were in a position to help. And our mission statement was always organizations succeed with video. And video had to be a way that they communicated now. And what we immediately did was we looked at our roadmap and we looked at the stuff we were working on and said, are we actually building features and functionality and prioritizing the things based on the way this market and ecosystem and the adoption curve has changed? And so to your question, yes, the major tailwind was obviously the arrival of COVID-19. How we furl the sails and capture that wind is entirely up to the business. And so immediately what we did was we expedited the process of launching our secure communications features. So the ability to lock down a video with password or via SSO for internal communications, sensitive information sharing. I personally saw a lot of leaders in the industry that were trying to communicate with their teams in a compassionate and empathetic way, but didn't want to put everyone in the company on a one-hour Zoom call every single week, given that everybody was spending 8 to 10 hours a day on video conferencing calls. And so they were now able to use that piece of software. We just recently launched V2 of the application, where we introduced the ability to move the bubble when you're doing a screen recording, to doodle on the screen so that you can highlight things and underline things, and basically a set of advanced functionality that made the product more accessible. Another one we did was ensured that on our, we have a strong integration and partner strategy that we're making those features and functionality available inside of the partner ecosystem, inside of any tool where Vidyard is able to be utilized, make sure that same suite of features was available to those end users, which was then able to amplify our impact. So yeah, I think 100%, but there was a tailwind, but it was totally up to the organization to fill the sales. And I've just been super impressed with how our team has responded and some of the amazing things they've done from a feature functionality perspective to ensure that we're able to help. And again, the vast majority, all these users I talk about are free, and you can argue the value that Vidyard ultimately gets from a free user inside of Virality and how the product is utilized. But in the end of the day, I think everybody feels better and sleeps better at night knowing that we can just simply help people communicate in a critical time.
Yeah, and I think in a lot of ways, what you're the way I've always thought about it is you segment the market, and you've got a lot of people who don't necessarily want to pay for premium features, and then they're not paying in, but then they're paying in by means of their attention and spreading from a virality and giving you some case studies and almost feeding your product development pipeline. Because I'm wondering if you've seen even some usages of the platform that wouldn't have even necessarily occurred to you guys, but then you see something and then it dawns on you, oh, wow, we can actually market this feature or this potential use case just because we're seeing our customers use it in a certain way.
Yeah, a really great example of that is in education. We had never targeted education, so communication between teachers and students. And of course, when teachers were floundering for a way of better communicating with students and vice versa, a number of them started using our product. And it actually first surfaced itself to me verbally with friends who were teachers and coworkers who were seeing it being utilized in their classroom. And so we were able to position ourselves around the educational opportunity and make sure that it was known that we can support and help that ecosystem. And so it was a whole new demographic of users that, again, we had never targeted, but we could help. And so we wanted to continue investing in it, and we'll do so in perpetuity, especially now that come fall, which is coming very quickly. It's amazing how fast the summer is starting to slip by. Students are going to be going back in hybrid ways in a lot of countries around the world, and we can continue to support that initiative. And again, that's with a free product, likely not to be monetized, but in some of those circumstances, parents are going to see teachers and students using the product, and then they're going to realize that they might be able to use it in their application and their workplace. And that's the beautiful thing about the freemium and product-led growth model is a free user is valuable regardless of what they're doing with the product and where they're doing it, especially in the context of a communication product, because a lot of people are going to see it. And that gives us an opportunity to acquire users.
So one thing, I'm going to shift gears just a little bit. I'm wondering, what, if any, downside do you see with respect to adding yet another tech tool to every worker's arsenal? And I got to admit that I'm probably, maybe this is a bigger problem for me than some other people, but I feel like I'm the person who needs to know about everything before other people do. So I sign up for everything, I get some value out of it, and then the problem is I realize I've got so many logins to remember. I have all of these different things that I have to become a subject matter expert on. Are we at the point yet where we have too much at our disposal? And is the answer that, like, if asynchronous video becomes a major value add for us, we just kill off using something else that's not as useful? I don't know, the fax machine, do people still have those? Something like that. What's your thought process around that?
Yeah, that's a great question. And I agree with you. We certainly feel like we've hit peak tech in a lot of ways. And there are tons of vendors doing basically everything that now exists. And in these winner-take-all markets, it seems to be those companies that have the most penetration that wins. And if you look at the MarTech landscape, which is a place we certainly exist in, when we launched Vidyard in 2011, there was 150 companies over a certain threshold to be featured in the MarTech landscape. In 2017, I think they called it the MarTech 5000. And now I think there's over 8,000 applications and platforms in that space. And the volume of options in each category has skyrocketed significantly, obviously, to your point. So our strategy has been to make sure that we are actually able to integrate the process of creating a video and using a video as a communication medium inside of existing workflows. So if you use our Chrome extension or our Edge extension, it sits inside of your email composer. It's not a separate thing, and your login is done via SSO. So if you're an organization using Google Apps and Gmail, once you install the product, it then sits inside of your composer window. It sits inside of your browser in a salient way. It's designed to work with your existing systems, not to crowd out or take over anything else. And I really do think that asynchronous video communication is complementary to other forms of communication. But of course, it's going to eventually eradicate something that would have been used in its place. And you bring up fax machines. Digital adoption is basically destroying the utilization of anything that was traditional in terms of pen and paper. The next wave is going to be how we augment these new methods of communication. And email largely destroyed the written memo. And I think of asynchronous video as something that ultimately complements and enriches the power of email. It's almost like this next phase of asynchronous communication. So yes, I agree with you. There's a lot of technology, but our mission and vision has always been to apply our technology, especially in the context of free, into the workflow of pre-existing applications that are already heavily used inside of most organizations.
Yeah, no, I think it's a good point. It's one of those things where I think that inevitably innovation is all about finding a way to solve a problem, but then whatever innovation that we bring to market creates some type of new problem, and then somebody else gets to solve that issue. It's just the nature of the beast in the MarTech world.
The things that actually provide value and solve problems are the ones that rise to the top and win these markets and become more heavily utilized. And of course, there's always going to be an ecosystem of applications that glob onto these things. And the interesting example of that is in the marketing automation space. Marketing automation was the victim of its own success because marketers were able to so easily send emails en masse to their entire mailing lists that open rates started to dwindle and decline rapidly, which created an opportunity for video to be used inside of that cadence, which was our entry point into the market. I 100% agree with you, but I think we are starting to work towards a more complete offering. And if you look at what HubSpot has done with an all-in-one strategy, I think it's very compelling because within one company and one suite of tools, you now have CRM and marketing automation and CMS and support and ticketing. And I think that greatly simplifies the go-to-market strategy for small businesses when something like that can win and be productive and innovate accordingly.
Obviously, you're a big believer in asynchronous video, but this is one thing I like to ask everybody whose job it is to more or less see the future. Like, you predicted that this could be a major market. It turns out that you were correct. And how do you challenge your own beliefs about the state of the economy, about the state of the tech world, about the future of your platform on an ongoing basis to make sure you're doing a good job at predicting the near-term future? Because you're incentivized to think a certain way. And how do you disconnect from those incentives to do a better job on an ongoing basis as a leader for the org?
Yeah, that's a very good question. You know, I think I've frankly always approached this kind of concept of innovation and piling resources into opportunities for growth in certain segments with a healthy dose of paranoia and skepticism. I don't know if that's a Canadian thing or that's a me thing. But even with this major tailwind we've had, we've been very cautious with respect to planning monetization strategies around it and ensuring that any dollar spent is done so very efficiently with a guide to our unit economics. One of the interesting aspects of this whole tailwind I've discussed is it also happened just as our company was crossing this threshold into profitability. And be a venture-backed organization that has found its way to profitability requires us to be very prudent and very efficient with respect to where we spend money. And whenever something's working, it becomes about looking for reasons why it will stop working or reasons why it might not be working as well as it otherwise could have. And so in that context, we build our go-to-market strategies. We build our product roadmaps. We always talk to users as much as humanly possible because we find that users are our best product managers. That said, they'll tell us what they want. It's up to us to now take that information and infer what they need. And so we have a very comprehensive process. And then it's a thing I love to do outside of that is to look at the next demographic. I talked about Generation Z and what they brought into the organization. Vidyard, and specifically this asynchronous video tool, wasn't something that I came up with. It wasn't something that Devin, my co-founder, came up with. It actually was something that technically a BDR on our team came up with because they were trying to stand out in their prospects' inbox. And so what they started to do was record a video using QuickTime, upload it to Vidyard, grab a screenshot from the video, embed that or drag and drop that as an image in the email, and then hyperlink that image to the sharing page of the video. And then when the view counter went from 0 to 1, they knew that the person they sent it to had watched it and they would follow up. And that was a highly complex process that worked for them, but we realized there was an opportunity to build software and a workflow around it. And so in that context, a behavior that existed in the world that then was very productive is what advised our product strategy and our roadmap. And that's really how we try to approach things, is really from this first principles understanding of what appears to be working and where are the opportunities to innovate.
Yeah, I was just going to say that makes a lot of sense. And I think the education example is another big thing. You say education isn't a focus, then education raises its hand and says, actually, I think we can be, and then you pivot accordingly. It sounds like it's a mix of having some kind of strong strategic direction, but also listening to the crowd as well.
Yeah, absolutely.
Michael, I think this was really great. And if anybody has not yet really become a diehard with async video like I have, I think they probably will after this conversation. So thanks so much for everything.
Thank you, Jeremy. Best of luck heading back to New York.
I'll need it.
Thanks again to Michael for making the time. If you haven't checked out his platform, or frankly, asynchronous video in general, I highly recommend you give it a shot. I know it's helped me a lot in terms of my productivity. If you'd like what you just heard and this is your first time here, be sure to subscribe. Apple Podcasts, Google Play, Stitcher, Spotify, the choice is yours. And if you're a longtime listener, please remember to rate and review Future Proof, as that's the number one way we get the show in front of people just like you. Special thanks this week to associate producers Jason Stack and V. Quartuccio. Once again, I'm Jeremy Goldman, and you've been listening to Future Proof.